You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Did you own the MC Hammer parachute pants when you were a young man?
If you don't believe me, I don't really care. I don't need a picture for it. I like the memory.
Giles Barnes has parachute pants, though. I think they're just catching on in Europe. Two-year-old thing.
So that's like reverse buyer's remorse.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
this is 11th dimension chess right here.
Yeah,
maybe.
I cheated
impressed.
A little bit. Yep.
That's good radio right there, guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York. You are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC Channel 85 and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, as always, Dave Goss out in the octagon of cats. Matt Doyle, what's up, guys? How's it going?
I'm living on the edge a little bit here, actually, because I've left the door open and both cats are in the room.
So. Ooh, is this an impending battle? Do we have the possibility of a cat fight in the background? I mean, it's like your equivalency of the radiator, I think.
It is, actually. And look, this whole thing could go south at any point.
So. All right. Well, if you've got to, tag out, as they might say, let us know. We'll hear it. We'll hear them going at it. Dave, we're going to jump right in here because there's a big Sunday going down in MLS. And look, Friday night's fun. Friday night's good. I'm going to be watching Friday night. You definitely should too. Philly and Orlando, 7 p.m. Eastern. Viernes de Football. Unimas. We'll talk about that in the second segment. But we're going to start on Sunday. And we are going to start with the first game. And that would be Houston and Seattle. But you know what? I'm going to tease this. Mike McGee joined us. His interview is going to be in a second, and this is really must-listen stuff. Mike McGee is the man.
You seem very – I agree. It was great. You seem very distracted.
I know. I'm, like, really manic right now. Yeah. I don't know what the deal is. I'm just I'm excited. I'm pumped up. I got a lot of things going on here. Let's start with the game. Houston, Seattle, 4 p.m., ESPN, big ESPN. That ought to be fun for everybody out there. Seattle got their first win. That's good. Houston's trying to bounce back. That's all right. What's this game about, Doyle? Who are you looking at most? What's kind of the theme for you?
To me, it's about what Houston could do in terms of making it frenetic. I mean, we saw early in the season that when they were able to get teams kind of running and scrambling, they were able to have a lot of success. But when the game is rhythmic, when the other team is able to string passes together and sort of keep their shape, Houston don't really have what it takes to break them down and sort of create chances out of nothing.
Is that we haven't seen a ton of Chaco Maidana this year. Is that a result of his absence? What's that a result of? What are they lacking?
I think they're lacking a distribution from the back, first off, and shape through midfield. I don't think it really has to do with Chaco. He's been there for, I think, three quarters of their minutes or two thirds of their minutes. And they've been pretty much the same team with him or without. And look, he creates a lot of chances, but they're all the same sort of chances where he drifts out wide to the left and he whips in a cross. Mm-hmm. That's what he does. And if you're sending in a lot of crosses like that, a lot of them get cleared upfield and you have to have guys there to win the second ball. But guess what? One of your central midfielders is all the way out on the left flank, so you have one less dude, and then suddenly things are going in the other direction. I think there are a lot of deficiencies in terms of just the structure. And for a team that doesn't have much happening in terms of run of play chances, which is Seattle, getting the chance to take advantage of that could actually work out in their favor, especially on the road, because Houston's going to have to move forward a little bit. So Seattle's going to be able to sit back a little bit and be a little bit cagey and maybe get out on the break, which they haven't been able to do almost at all this year.
There really is a big difference in MLS and in every league of playing a home and away, and certainly travel plays a portion here and unfamiliar surroundings. I want to talk to you, Dave, about something in Seattle that doesn't have to it kind of has to do with this game. We've talked about this a lot over the last couple weeks. Hey, they need an attacking midfielder. They need some sort of revamping of the squad, some new piece, and we've seen Chris Henderson moving around South America via his Twitter account.
He is hilarious.
Man, the Sounders fans, they're playing some clue with this one. They're trying to figure out who he's zeroing in on. And a lot of people out there saying, I think it's Jason Vargas. I think it's just a crazy spelling of that, but you know how pronunciation goes for us. It may not be that. He's an 18-year-old Chilean attacker. He's got some great stats. He's playing in their first division. He was linked with Borussia Dortmund. This sounds exciting.
It sounds really exciting.
Based on Sounder at Hearts, like detective work.
Yeah, it sounds really exciting. It also sounds like the type of thing we get really excited about and find out that it's in no way real sometimes. Or other times we get really excited about it and it ends up happening. So you never know, but we've talked about it a few times on the show. The pieces don't fit together, but they have this opportunity to bring in what could be one of the staples of their team still, and it can make all of those pieces fit together properly. They have to get this move right because this is the move that has the potential to push them in. I think the back line's good. Stefan Frey, I think, is a strong goalkeeper, strong enough. I think they have pieces in the midfield that are useful. They clearly have pieces up top, but it doesn't fit together.
How do you
right?
connect them?
And if you can get that guy that can come in, he doesn't have to be the best player on the team, but he has to be the right fit to allow everyone to go back into a position that makes them comfortable, then this is a team that has the rest of the talent to compete for an MLS Cup.
Yeah, complimentary parts.
And they're sitting at the bottom of the table right now. So
it's early.
But yes, it's early, but like that's the talent that's there.
Very much so. This team has high expectations. You can watch them do battle with the Dynamo. 4 p.m. Eastern, ESPN on Sunday, the second game of the day. You have an hour break or so to get some dinner in and sit back down in front of the TV. For Chicago NYCFC, this one's at Yankee Stadium, 7 p.m. FS1. If you haven't seen it yet, it did just drop here on Thursday. MLSsoccer.com's got a really cool short film for you. 10 minutes, all access, Veljko Panovic, Patrick Vieira, basically that wild 4-3 game that they played to start the season. All access to that. I mean, all access. Really nothing barred there. So go check that one out. It's very interesting to see kind of behind the scenes how these guys coach, how these guys lead their team. David Akam should be back for NYCFC. That's really, really big for them.
It would be big.
You said it. I'm.
It would be big for NYCFC as well, but not in a good way.
Yeah, that's true. I'm a little bit out there right
that's
now.
Fine.
There are some transfer rumors linked with these two clubs right now. There was the FC Groningen player that we had talked about at the beginning of the season. Delu, I think, is how you say it. I think being the key phrase there. He's their leading scorer. They're rumored to be linked with him, and also a 20-year-old box-to-box central midfielder who's in Hungary right now. I think Senegalese guy, but no confirmation there. But they have said, we're going to get two, probably quiet in the summer, but we're going to get two before Chicago. How should they be feeling? They got their first win of the season last weekend, Matt. This is another pretty good opportunity for them, I would think.
It is. I still don't know what to make of them going forward. Obviously, if Akam is back, then that helps a lot, because then, honestly, just booting it upfield and hoping he could run onto it becomes a viable option. But the defense has, I think, steadily improved. Jonathan Campbell, the rookie from North Carolina, is arguably the front runner for rookie of the year, and it's a shame we didn't make the Olympics, because he would have had a shot at that team. I think he's been that good. But I mean, anything that happens now is almost immaterial compared to the moves that I think they're going to be making either by the end of this transfer window, or the one that, you know, the one that opens up in the summer. It's still the earliest days.
And one of the things I think going for them in this game is it's a tight field. There's not a lot of room to operate, and I think that's going to play to Chicago's advantage, because they want to pack numbers in defensively. They're going to play with a defensive six, most likely, if not seven players. And so you have that opportunity. There's not a lot of gaps to really open up in between them. There's not as much space to lose a David Villa. So they have that going for them, and like Doyle said, if Campbell can keep the game in front of him, I think they have a good chance of at least squeaking out a result.
It'll be very interesting to see how Vieira approaches this game. He played that WM in their first ever game at Yankee Stadium this season. Tactically,
also bizarre, 4 games played for these two teams, and they already have a rematch of the first game of the season.
They're back at it. We'll see what happens. 7 p.m. Eastern, FS1. The final game of the night, Portland Timbers at LA Galaxy, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, FS1. Mike McGee is going to play a big role in this one, you'd think. No Keno, no Steven Gerrard. I don't believe we could see Giovanni Dos Santos back in this one. I would guess we'll see Mike McGee. He's on the line now. Mike, what's up, man?
Oh, it was great. Thanks for having me.
No doubt. This is your off day. What happens on off days? I mean, how does this go for you? I know on my off day I do as little as possible, but I'm curious for you guys.
Yeah, normally my chores around the house get bulked up, but you know, the kids and my girl are in Chicago, so I'm hanging. I'm watching some soccer. I'm gonna go to the coffee shop, maybe a bike ride, and I don't have to do stuff I'm never allowed to.
That's relaxing. That sounds great. I would kill for that today. What's the chore that you get assigned that you just hate?
Oh, that I hate? No, I almost answered that too quick. I was about to say daddy duty. But I love it. I thought you were going to say, what chore do I get? You know, nothing. It's just you think you're going to get to relax. You know, you finally get a day off, and instead you're, you know, it's not bad. Don't get me wrong, but I'm at the beach playing soccer with my daughter for about 6 hours. So off days are kind of non-existent.
Yeah,
so I'm taking advantage of this.
That doesn't sound like a chore at all.
Doing basically nothing.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, hopefully your family doesn't listen to this, so they won't know that you're enjoying your day without them.
Yeah, I'm assuming that they won't. I think that's a pretty safe assumption. Yesterday, April 6th, is 20 years to the day of the first ever MLS game. If you didn't catch it, for those of you listening, go check out our oral history at MLSsoccer.com. We've got a ton of cool stuff. We live streamed the game again. I'm curious, though, Mike, do you remember where you were on April 6th, 1996? Were you watching this game?
No, I can't lie. No, I wasn't watching it. I know Ronaldo got things started, and that's about as much as I got.
What's your oldest Major League Soccer memory?
You know, I think for me it was, you know, the Fire coming to the league. You know, I was from Chicago. You know, unfortunately, growing up, I didn't watch as much soccer as I, you know, probably should have. But you know, when the Fire came in the league, it kind of, you know, was a sign that this is what I wanted to do. So I went to a game at Soldier Field with, you know, Bob Bradley, me and Michael Bradley. Actually, the Bradleys brought me to the game, and you know, it was incredible.
What kind of access did you get there? Because we always hear about Michael. You know, he's training with the guys. He's in the locker room. He's running around. Are you like needling him at that age? Like, hey, get me in there. Let me meet these guys. You know, where's Stoichkov?
Oh yeah, we were probably the two most hated kids in the stadium, I'm sure. You know, walk with all access passes, and we're, you know, in the locker room and doing all that. I think I only went a couple times, so they probably hated Michael a little more than me. But it was really, really unique and cool.
So then 2003, you get to play for Bob Bradley. As an 18-year-old, you come into Major League Soccer. You're on the New York Metro Stars alongside guys like Amado Guevara. They just sold Tim Howard. Eddie Gavin comes in with you. Rico Clark. Eddie Pope. Take that 2003 Metro Stars team. It's a pretty strong squad. Where would they finish in the 2016 Major League Soccer standings?
Yeah, don't forget Clint Mathis. We were very inconsistent. We were real young, and you know, I think at that time in MLS, players were coming and going nonstop. If we all stayed together, man, I don't know. I think we'd do all right. We had a really good group of guys, so we would have had a good time, to say the least.
What are you doing as an 18-year-old in New York City or Jersey or wherever you were? Like, outside the field, what do you remember from those days?
Oh, I was in Hoboken, New Jersey. It was me, Kenny Arena, Seth Stamler, Zach Wells. A lot of us just getting into trouble, being kind of idiots. But yeah, we had a blast. We loved soccer and competing, and we loved laughing off the field. So it was you know, I'm not gonna forget about those days ever.
That sounds pretty fun. That's like a who's who right there of people around U.S. soccer. What was your neighborhood? What was your spot? Like, did you guys stick in Hoboken? Where were you hanging out in the city?
Oh man, you're gonna get me in trouble if I answer these truthfully.
Well, you were only 18.
We like to go into Manhattan. You know, it was a path, train away, or ferry, and you know, here we are. You know, I think I was 17 or 18, and we were all between you know, 18 and 22, and you know, all of us living in Hoboken, that city was, I don't know, it was right there, so it was hard to resist.
You were pulling the I'm a professional soccer player card, weren't you? I mean, I
would. Nah, to be honest, nah, it didn't work in New York. I was an NYU student. soccer wasn't getting us anywhere.
Oh, that is perfect. Great line. So 2003 till now, what's changed? What's the biggest like evolution that you've seen when you look at the league then and now? What stands out for you?
Yeah, I mean, in my first year as a team, the league was, I mean, it was great, but it, you know, it was a bit stagnant. And then I think from the day Beckham came into the league, it you've seen, for first of all, I mean, the day he got here, the league all of a sudden was known around the world, and each year after, it's grown so much. So from 2003 to now, it's I mean, it's saying it's black and white and understanding.
Is there a year that you were in the league where you actually noticed, or maybe you think back and say, wow, from, you know, one season to the next, the quality or whatever it was, the professionalism, anything took a real jump. I mean, you say Beckham and the popularity, but do you ever think back and say, oh, from, you know, 09 to 10 was a huge jump or something?
It was, for me, it was the year I got to the Galaxy. You know, nothing against the situation in New York, but it was, you know, it wasn't really stable. And, you know, at the time, that, I mean, they haven't figured out now, the Red Bulls, but at the time we absolutely didn't. So the year I got to the Galaxy was, I mean, it was an eye opener getting to watch, guys like Landon and David and then Robbie Keane, you know, seeing these guys on a daily basis. You know, it was basically my first, you know, I was, whatever I was, 24 years old. It was the first time in my life I was kind of learning what it was like to be, you know, to be a professional athlete, which is kind of sad, but it's, you know, it was perfect. And, you know, it was exactly what I needed.
What did you pick up from them? What were the things that, you know, maybe seem obvious to you now and are part of your regimen, but at the time, just, it was out of the blue for you. You were shocked by it.
Seeing how hard these guys trained on a daily basis and, you know, how much the game meant to them. And, it was just kind of seeing how, like, these guys weren't taking days off and plays off. And, you know, if after everything they've done for the game, you know, I can't find one reason why I should.
Now, we always hear stories about Thierry Henry in New York and some of the things that he did and the attention that he got from his teammates when he felt like things weren't going the right way or that the right attention to detail wasn't being paid or effort wasn't there in training. Do you remember any instances where, you know, David or Robbie or Landon stood up and said, this isn't good enough, or there was a blow up, or there was something where it was, you know, things got serious real quick?
It was constant, I'd say. You know, the bar was always trying to be raised, and you know, at all times, which is why we were so successful. And I think the year I got here, you know, we lost in the final, probably to Salt Lake, and the year before they might have been, I think, maybe the worst team in the league. So, you know, when I was coming in, it was Bruce Arena, so he's raising the bar and getting the right group of guys. And you know, obviously with David and, you know, Landon, they were sick of losing. So it was it was a great year and demanding and, you know, rewarding at the same time.
Tactically, how has the game changed from the time you came into the league? I mean, Bob, of course, was a national team coach coaching in Europe. These are guys that know the game, but it seems like the league's developed. What are the big changes you feel like over these few years?
I mean, there's just so many. The amount of good soccer players in this league is it's incredible. So it's that much more difficult, and the game's faster, and, you know, guys are bigger and stronger, and tactics are, you know, a lot more important because there's, you know, guys with actual soccer IQs. You know, when I was first in the league, it was just kind of whichever team was the, you know, tried the hardest would probably win, or whoever would, you know, kick the other team the most would win. So now you got to have some brains.
Is there anything from when you first started in the league, when the league maybe wasn't as popular or as, you know, robust, that you maybe looking back wouldn't mind coming back or missing? Anything endearing? You know, I was an NBA fan in the 90s when teams were getting scraps and brawls, and now it's such a great game to watch, but it's so much different. Is there anything you think back on and go, oh, things were nice when that happened?
You know, the one thing that, you know, I'm not sure why or how, or it must be because of the quality coming to the league, is you don't see as many young guys breaking through. It's a little more, you know, I think that's a little further in between. So, you know, I enjoy watching, you know, young kids and, you know, doing dumb stuff and doing great stuff at the same time. And, you know, back in the beginning, it was, you know, every team probably two or three basically kids playing, and it was, you know, it was fun to watch. So now it's not really as possible with how many good foreigners are coming in and, you know, veterans sticking around and all that.
So you took us right to where we wanted to go. That was a pretty good transition, Mike. I was just going to ask you, when you broke in at 18, you got 19 starts, you scored 7 goals, had a couple of assists. I mean, this is as a teenager. Do you think American attacking players, do they get enough chances to break through? And, like, why maybe not? Is that, like you said, the Valeris, the Javi Mos of the world? How can we better develop those young American attacking players and give them opportunities?
Oh man, I have no idea. I can't even make that up. I mean, I guess coaching would be the easy answer. Coaches are gonna play the best players, and unfortunately for young Americans, there's Giovinco's and Robbie Keane's and Thierry Henry's, and it's gonna be a long time. For young Americans to be able to be as good as Giovinco. So it's tough.
Yeah, certainly tough. You're in a club that puts a lot of resources into their youth development, a lot into Galaxy 2, Los Dos, and you're seeing guys like Jose Villarreal and Jack McBean and Raul Mendiola and all these other guys get opportunities there. How have you seen that maybe change the setup in LA and change the way that those players are treated? And what do you think about kind of this USL initiative? Do you wish that was around when you were 18 years old? Although I guess you were in the first team.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, this academy the Galaxy has is incredible. Seeing these kids, and it's pretty amazing. And Ari Lasseter and Jose and Jack and even the Steers and Romney and these guys are bringing up are it's crazy that these guys are just kind of in the system floating around. But yeah, I absolutely wish there was somewhere where I could get real games. I mean, we had the reserve league and stuff, but I feel like the times I'd be playing in it, we'd have like our assistant coach would be playing, and then the backup goalie would be playing center mid, and you'd play like Sunday morning, like 8 a.m. and it was hard for guys to get really motivated for it, so you wouldn't really get a proper game. And now that our fans come out to these games at the stadium, and these games are important and big, and guys are getting to show, what kind of players they are. So yeah, I wish I had them.
Did you ever look at yourself after one of those reserve league games, 8 a.m. on a weekend with a backup goalie playing center mid, and think, what am I doing?
Nah, to be honest, I actually loved it. I think I was one of the few guys, but I enjoyed it a lot. I was funny and fun, and it kind of reminded me back, when I was a kid playing, and it was kind of all helter-skelter right there.
And then on the flip side, 2013, 21 goals. You win MVP. Do you look at that season, and you've had success throughout MLS, but your previous high had been 7 goals. What happened? Do you just think, everything's going in? I mean, when you look back now with a little bit of time, do you think about that season?
As dumb as it sounds, I've only played forward really twice in my career for full seasons, and once was my rookie season. And then I tried telling people I was a forward, and no one wanted to believe that some slow little dude who's injured all the time could play forward. And then, Frank Klopas gave me the chance, and obviously went well. And then Klopas was gone, and then my position kind of left with it, and then I got injured again. So I love playing, I love playing midfield, but the goals came simply because I was by the goal.
So you think, let's say we put you at forward for 8 straight years. Are we talking about a guy who's at the top of the MLS scoring charts? I mean, I'm basically asking you to toot your own horn, I guess, but
I don't know. That's, you could say that for a lot of guys probably.
Listen, Wando was a late bloomer, and he broke the 100 or whatever mark, so you still have time.
Yeah, I'd say so. I'm not worried about it in the slightest, but yeah, I'd love to score a couple hundred more goals. That'd be sweet.
There you go. Now, I think back on that as well, and I don't want this to be a downer for you, Mike, but I think back on that 2013, and you got the call with the U.S., and then I think if I remember right, you got sick. There was something that happened where you couldn't be in camp. Do you look back on that and think like, man, damn, I had a chance here, and just like fate screwed me out of it?
I got a pretty great life, and it doesn't make me look back too much. But since you're bringing it up, yeah, I mean, it was a great camp. Everything went well. I was lined up playing that game. Obviously, get food poisoning. Had a great talk with Jurgen after about, my chances there going forward, and basically telling me I need to score goals, and the door is open for me. And then all of a sudden my right leg about fell off. So yeah, we'll see. I don't care what what my age is. I'm gonna keep playing, and you know, we'll see. You know, the door's not closed, I don't think.
The key question here is what did you eat? What should we be avoiding here?
I ate the same thing as everyone else, which is the crazy part. Somebody poisoned me.
Oh, man.
Sabotage.
Somebody got to me.
Sabotage.
Sabotage.
Man,
sure.
That's tough.
One of the things we wanted to ask you when we, you know, sat down to start thinking about questions was you played for Bruce Arena in 2006 with the Red Bulls. You then went to L.A. You played for him. Then you left L.A. and you came back. Bruce is an enigma of a human being. I mean, he's the patriarch of Major League Soccer. What's changed in him from when you first worked with him to now?
Oh, man, it's not much.
I think that's an
expected. I mean, he's obviously, you know, getting better at what he does and finding, you know, loopholes in the league and ways to win and doing all these things that he was doing before. So that's tough to answer, but you know, what's easy to say is he's the best. So it's you know, it's awesome to play for him, and you know, I couldn't be happier.
There's not many coaches that after games, I will always look at their quote sheets. I will always watch their post-game press conference. Bruce is one of the very few. What's your favorite Bruce quote? Because we did this oral history, and I found myself laughing out loud reading through his transcript of the interview we did. I mean, it's hilarious. Like, his dry humor just kills me.
I don't read too many of his post-game quotes. I try to – he's too honest in those. I'm not trying to get my feelings hurt, so I stay away from those. I mean, on a daily basis, it's pretty constant that, you know, he's a funny guy to say the least.
Do you ever get on? What's he say to you in practice? What's the one line in practice to you that cut deep or that you thought?
What's his go to?
Yeah.
His go to for me is that I'm getting cut. So he always finds a way to tell me that. You know, don't worry, you'll be cut soon. So I remind him that my contract's guaranteed, and you know, go ahead. But yeah, he's I don't know, we're pretty close in that regard. So it's not crazy.
It sounds like an inspirational environment to be a part of.
Ice cold from Bruce. I don't know if you heard him the other day. He said, you know, the red cards are too many, and so many coaches are saying that right now, and everybody's trying to figure out what's going on. Siggy Schmidt said, you know, it's an adaption process, and this is what happens when you kind of change things a little bit like that. What do you think about the red cards? Has it swung too far one way? I mean, where do you stand?
That's a tough one. I obviously don't want to see red cards. I think it's, Obviously, as coaches and people commenting, that you're always going to say you want less red cards when your team gets a red card, right? I think players know. You see a lot of thumbs up tackles, and they're trying to get rid of that. So I don't mind that at all. I mean, if I was 6'4", 210 pounds, I'd wish they let that stuff go. But since I'm about half that, I'd say, I'd like no contact to be allowed at all. So It's a weird one. It's a weird one. And cameras are getting better on TV, so you know, refs can't get away with anything. You know, they got HD and slow mo and all this crazy stuff. So, you know, it's only making it harder for the refs.
Now, you said it though. You're a smaller player. You're an attacking player. You've been in this league for a while. Did you feel like it was too physical before, or did you feel like players like attacking players weren't protected?
There were so many dumb challenges back in the day. I can only imagine what it was, you know, the generation before me. But I remember playing like the Houston Dynamo, for example. You know, Eddie Robinson and Weibel and all these guys that would literally just kill you. And there was no way they were getting a red card. So it was. I mean, they were good and they were physical, and you know, that's what it took to win. And those guys did it. But playing against them was like, I mean, you just lived in an ice tub after those games.
I can imagine, man. I can imagine. Weibel's a beast. Even today, I think he would run me over for sure. We got your comments in a good piece by Bobby Warshaw on the site, and it was I don't know if lucky is the right word, but we put it out, and the very same day, the Revs play on with Kamar Lawrence down and score a game-winning goal. And in that article, you said, you know, He said, hey, karma comes back to teams, and this is the thing to happen. Has this is something that it felt like everyone in MLS was talking about. Is this something that you guys talked about in the LA locker room? And when you saw this play, what did you think?
I mean, the first thing I thought was why was their line so high? I mean, they know they have a guy down. It's easy to say for me watching it on replay, though. I don't know. I really don't. It kind of depends what was happening before that, and I didn't see it. But the glaring thing to me was why was New York 30 yards ahead of the guy on the ground. I thought that wasn't that probably wasn't in their best interest.
Interesting. I don't think we've heard that perspective.
Yeah, no one's really mentioned that.
That's an interesting point. Is that you know?
Oh no. Am I breaking news here?
Yeah.
I don't know about breaking news, but you're opening our
minds. You're definitely better at what we do than we are, that's for sure.
That might be a good point. You have a lot of more chemistry with Robbie Keane than I do as well. This is something I always think when I watch you guys, and I know Robbie's out, and we'll talk about that in a second, but I think this is more generally about chemistry. Like, how does that happen? Do you guys, were you just from day one, were you on the same page? Was it developed? Why you?
Oh no, it wasn't. It was absolutely not day one. It was. This took a lot of him yelling at me and cussing me out and all that before I could figure it out. And I mean, my mindset was from day one. You know, it's always kind of been if I like playing soccer. So when I get the ball, I'm not. No offense to outside backs, but I don't want to play at the outside back. I want to play Robbie Keane. I want to play David Beckham and even force it into my if I have to. So every day in training from when he got here and knowing if you don't pass him the ball, you're gonna hear from him for a while. It was just learning his runs and timing and you know he's the best forward I've ever seen on a daily basis, and it's you know, you got to figure it out because it's the most important thing for the team. You know, in my eyes, is getting Robbie on the ball because he makes things happen.
What came quicker, chemistry with him on the field or understanding what he was yelling at you?
Came quicker?
Yeah, because I feel like I hear these like behind the all access things, and Robbie's yelling, and I have no idea what he's saying half the time. It's like
What came quicker? I would say. They both took a while, especially on the field. On the field or after a beer, his accent comes a little bit thicker.
Get that brogue going, huh? Get the brogue going. Yeah. So on Monday, we tried to put a finger on you guys on the Galaxy, and I know you got so many injuries. You got a brand new team. You know, we couldn't really do it. Are you guys in the same boat in a sense? Do you have a vision of what this team will look like in September, or is it still feeling things out and still trying to figure out what works and how it works and what the best combinations are?
No, I think we know how this is going to pan out. I think it's going to look pretty good soon. Obviously getting guys healthy, is huge. The team's not won many road games in the past couple of years. So, trying to figure out how we want to play on the road is going to be important. I think in Vancouver we took a big step forward pre-red card. I thought we played really well and we came out fast and we're playing like we wanted to win and not just sit back and see what happens. So continuing that and then just getting these guys, you know, Nigel and Yella and Ashley and getting these guys accustomed to the league is going to be huge. I mean, these guys are bizarrely good. So it's going to be kind of scary if we get clicking on all cylinders.
Sunday, it's the Portland Timbers, MLS Cup champions, 9:30 p.m. Eastern time on Fox Sports 1. You've been in these shoes where you've won a title and then actually you won it again the year after. But what's that follow-up year like? What are the Timbers kind of going through now? Take us into what that experience is like being the cup holders.
You celebrate in the off-season more than you normally would and sometimes get a little bit complacent, so it takes a little longer. Portland's good. You know, I don't think they've gotten the results they've wanted so far, but they're a really good team, and they'll get going. So we got to make sure it doesn't start against us.
Big game, 9:30 p.m. as Dave said, FS1 on Sunday. Before we let you go, Mike, we got one final question for you. we're kind of throwing an idea around here. We're going to do maybe a roast of Sebastian Legette. You're our first choice to come up on the mic, man. What's your burn here? What are you going with?
I'm gonna pull out his Instagram and get started there.
How much does he get in the locker room? I mean, I think he can take it. He looks like he can certainly take it, and I think he's enjoying life in LA, if I had to guess. But is that Instagram, like, everybody's seeing that and sending the group text of like, oh, we got him on this one?
Oh, absolutely. No, he's the best. I mean, he's such a good dude and nice, and it's actually funny when you see his Instagram and he's got these shirtless selfies, and I don't know. If it was like the Chicago kid growing up in me, I'd be thinking differently about him. But knowing him, he's the best dude in the world. But yeah, it's funny. It's good banter, and he obviously takes it well, and he's not lacking confidence, so we're not hurting it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Do you have a name for the face? What's it from Zoolander? Blue Steel? Does he have a moniker
Steel.
For that yet? I mean,
no, I don't know the face. I know he's big on the eye squint.
Big eye squinter. Yep,
he's got the eye squint going. We could probably think of get a nickname going, but yeah, he's got the eye squint down. I mean, listen, he's a good looking dude. We're all. Maybe it's jealousy from us. I don't know, but
it definitely is on our side.
I hope he keeps him coming because he's got it all. He's got us all laughing.
For sure. We'll watch him in action on Sunday, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, FS1. Mike McGee, follow him on Twitter as well. He's a hoot there too. Mike, enjoy your day off, man. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. My pleasure.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com. or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, big job, getting by with 9 kids and a wife. Yeah, but I've been a working man, dang near all my life. And I'll keep
back
on
now
working.
On Extra Time Radio. We're working, Merle Haggard. Good stuff. Rest in peace, Merle. A classic, an icon. No doubt about that. Let's talk a little bit about MLS as we transition in here to Friday, Orlando and Philadelphia. A good game here. I mean, you're going to enjoy that. And I'm going to start you on a question, guys, that we posed on the site today, because I think Christian Higuita is the most underrated player in MLS, or at least the guy that people have not yet started to recognize. I think he's Ozzy Alonso light and barely light right now. I think he's about to push his way into that echelon. I want to know who your underrated player are. Who's the one in the MLS you look around and you're like, man, this is my guy? And Dave, I see that you're doing some hard thinking here.
Because
so.
I didn't know this was coming. Know, Doyle, do you have one ready to go?
I picked Steven Bedeshore. And I think to 2 points. First is that he is really underrated. But second is that fullbacks in general have become the most underrated position in the game. And I think that 12, 15 years ago, you would have said that about defensive midfielders, and then everybody kind of realized, oh, Makalele was the key for Real Madrid's run of success, and everybody started looking for that and appreciating that. So I can't be with Weeby on the Christian Higuita thing, because I think people just appreciate central midfielders, defensive midfielders now, but fullbacks still get no love, and a guy like Bedeshore, who is going to come in every game and just make smart play after smart play after smart play, he makes it easier to defend, easier to maintain possession, easier to attack, and nobody seems to recognize that. So I think it's actually a pretty easy call.
Now, you can't pick a defensive midfielder,
I know,
Dave, because
I can't think of
apparently we can't have
right
defensive
now.
Midfielders be underrated. No, I'm just
I think
kidding. I still like Higuita.
I can judge it however I want.
You don't have
right?
one, do you?
Michael Barrios, because I think Castillo and Diaz are the stars. Urruti's gotten a lot of talk coming into this year, and you watch what they do at times when teams shift towards Castillo. He kills teams. I mean, he can win games by himself if you don't focus. So, no, he's not a guy that people don't think is very good. I mean, I thought João Plata was underrated coming into this year. Clearly, he's not anymore. Jorge Villafaña was a big one last year that clearly isn't anymore.
I mean,
so.
Rodney Wallace on that same team kind of occupied that territory.
But, yeah, I don't really know where to go with that question, so that's where I'm going
to land. Well, we'll throw it out to the listeners out there. I'm sure that you have some. It can be on the team you support, any team. What's a guy that you think is underrated or a guy that's just not getting enough credit, even if he is rated to a certain extent. Let us know. Extra Time Radio at MLSsoccer.com, be email at Extra Time Radio on Twitter. We'll give out some swag to the ones we agree with. Not to say that our opinion is like the deciding.
No, just
here,
if you. I don't care if we
a good
agree
one.
With you,
just,
by the way.
Yeah, a good one. Just a good yeah. one. But this should be a good game for Orlando and Philly. 7 p.m. Eastern on Uni Moss. Make sure you tune in for that one. Breck Shea is suspended for this game. It came down from the disciplinary committee. That tackle that he had, I think, like 14 minutes in or so.
Doyle, that one's for you because you hate beautiful soccer and you didn't want him on the field for that goal. And you despise volleys.
So, all for
enemy of the game.
That's right. That's right. Watch that game. It should be good. Columbus at Montreal is coming up to start off our Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern. If you're in Canada, TVA Sports, MLS Live here in the state, make sure you go out and grab that. It's a great resource to have. Your Saturdays are basically, or your nights are basically decided with MLS Live. You can watch basically all the matches. This is a good one, though. This is a rematch from the playoffs. And Evan Bush said this week they should have got by Columbus Crew SC.
Right.
Which, you know, look, that's like sour grapes after the fact, but take it for what it is.
Well, it seems like Montreal's turned around clearly from that playoff loss, and they started the year pretty strong. Doyle, I want to ask you, though, they start Kyle Becker and Eric Alexander against Seattle in the last game. You're a big fan of Eric Alexander, I know. Is that a central midfield, even with the attacking pieces they have, the center backs that they have and potentially Drogba, is that good enough to make an MLS Cup run?
No, but I don't think that Kyle Becker is a starter. But I think that he's a fifth or sixth guy on the depth chart. And last week he started over Callum Malice, but Callum Malice is a backup player as well. I think the guy that they're missing is Marco Donadel.
And you think that's good enough? Alexander and Donadel?
I think a healthy central midfield trio of Alexander, Donadel, and Harry Ship can absolutely put you in the top four or five in the league. And, once you get to the playoffs, it's a crapshoot. Now, the other part of it is, look, it's an 11-person game. It's not just these three guys. It's do you get support from the fullbacks? Generally, they do. Last week, they didn't get a whole lot. They missed Ambrose Oyongo. And you also have to have a guy at center forward, especially in this lineup, who can do a little bit of hold-up play. They don't really have that this part of the season and won't this weekend because Drogba's not going to play. So there's a lot of things to take in, but I think if you have a healthy Donadel, Alexander, and Ship, you're in pretty good shape.
And this is the last game at Stade Olympique, so Drogba should be around the corner as well. Ayango coming back, which I think is a huge part.
Yep, the big O. We'll see how the Crew deal with that. They said, Greg Berhalter said, hey, it's going to be fun. Should be an occasion. They need to get Kai Kamara and Ethan Finley going, though. Those two guys last year really, really helped drive that attack. Not really producing right now. We'll see what they do. 4 p.m. on Saturday, Vancouver at DC United follows that one up. At 5:30 p.m., once again, up in Canada, TSN, MLS Live, right here in the States. Marcelo Sarvas is coming back. That's big. Kakuta Mane might be in on this game. We're not sure. He got pulled last week with an injury, but he's back in training, so that could be a big one for them. But their talisman, Pedro Morales, it looks like it could be a while. And Mateus Laba, he probably could go under that most underrated, but not on Doyle's list. Not so, because he's a midfielder there. What are we looking at here? I mean, this is kind of – I'm wondering how DC approaches this one. And they're at home. You feel like they'd have to push the game, but against Vancouver, if you push too hard, they're going to burn you on the counter. And right now that feels like between that and set pieces, they don't have much else. There's not many other clubs in the bag.
You literally said it all. They are only a counterattacking and set piece team. This feels like a classic 1-0 or 0-0 game. So in MLS fashion, I'm sure it'll be 6-5 in the most exciting game of the season.
I remember that RSL DC game last year, I believe, at RFK. I'm kind of in that vein. I actually skipped the game here. Toronto FC at New England, 4 p.m. Eastern, also on TSN, MLS Live. I don't know how I missed that one.
Because you hate Toronto.
I like Toronto.
Everyone knows you hate the city of Toronto.
They're fine. I don't have any strong feelings toward Toronto. They head into this game, and they're on pace. On pace for their big road trip. 8 games. They wanted 8 points from this, so said Bill Manning. They're doing that. They're a little upset last week with that game in Colorado. Thought that Cheru shouldn't have been sent off. Thought that the goal was offsides. That's water under the bridge at this point, though. New England need to get something done. I think Toronto FC are going to sit back on them
but
and pump the ball over the top.
They will, and they have so far this season, but Josie's back now. Josie will start, and that is one of the three pillars of their team. So what we've seen so far, we can't say exactly. We know what Toronto FC looks like because he's supposed to be a huge part of what they want to do. And from people up in Toronto and from the people, you know, the writers around Toronto, they feel like he's figuring out how to play forward off of Giovinco more, how to be more of a option, a target in the box on all crosses, a little bit more of the hold-up play. So that could be huge for them if they can get some of that on the road, because New England did not look dominant at all against New York last week at home, and I think Toronto could get a win here.
Yeah, still have those attacking pieces, but they're just not firing. Not firing right now. I think both of these teams are a ways from being what they truly are. TFC, you got to wait till they get home.
Yeah.
Like, without home games, it really is almost impossible to see what they are. So tread water, see if you can get those 8 points in the eight games. And
which also, by the way, when you look at how the schedule has turned out in the early part, the East and West has had very – it looks very odd right now, and a lot of that is because of scheduling. I mean, Columbus, I think, has played one home game. TFC obviously isn't going to play a home game. Montreal's playing at Stade Olympique and on the road. So it's very the table is going to look a little bit weird for the first few weeks, and then it'll hopefully even itself out.
I mean, maybe it won't. Who knows?
It's MLS.
Who knows? A big game at Red Bull Arena this weekend. Sporting Kansas City coming in there. They may have lost their last game. They're no longer without a blemish, but they come into a Red Bull team that – I mean, I don't know how many times we can repeat this. That back line is in it's in trouble. It's in trouble. So they've got maybe Zubar back this weekend. Not sure on that. Gideon Ba, perhaps? No?
I don't think. It sounds
Gonzalo
like
Ba and Verón, no?
It sounds like Ba and Verón are close but won't be. Zubar, it sounds like, is a potential, but I don't even know if they risk him there. And then
Zubar
Felipe
is so error-prone. I mean, it's just been game after game after game with him. I'm not sure it's the best thing if he's coming back.
Yeah.
I think at some point you have to turn the page and take a chance on one of the kids.
Right. You have Zach Carroll, who they drafted at Michigan State, who everyone's a big fan of and thinks can be a good player. Felipe suspended. Sean Davis might step in for him. Gotta say, I'm a big Sean Davis fan.
Big Sean
Davis
could
be the most underrated player in MLS if he gets any playing time.
Well, he plays midfield, so he's disqualified.
That's
unfortunately.
True. He is a center mid.
Yeah, it's tough. A lot of injuries on KC's side, too. Matt Beisler's still out. Brad Davis is going to miss this one with a concussion as well. Looks like Benny Feilhaber is going to be back. Roger Espinoza is going to be back. This, to me, is a huge opportunity for Kansas City to come grab three road points, and they need him. They just got to find a way to get that attack going. Got to find a way to get Dom Dwyer more involved, better chances in front of goal, and finish those things. Big game, 7 p.m. Eastern, MLS Live, SKC and Roark Red Bulls. Yeah, I got that one a little chewed up in my mouth there. Yeah.
Thanks, Scooby. Thanks for letting us know.
Oh, man. San Jose headed to FC Dallas on Saturday night, 9 p.m. Eastern as well. MLS Live. Catching a theme here. If you want to just hang out at home and veg out on MLS, which is probably what I'm going to do, hit up MLS Live. Go get yourself some of that. FC Dallas are nigh on unbeatable at Toyota Stadium. I mean, they just don't lose there. They had a 10-game unbeaten streak. This game, San Jose, they're going to kick Mauro Diaz if he plays. We're going to see Michel Barrios, the most underrated player in MLS, according to Dave, thrive. What are we going to see, Doyle?
I hope we see Diaz. FC Dallas are, you know, orders of magnitude less fun to watch when he's not playing. So, but there hasn't been a concrete injury update on him. On the other side, there hasn't been a concrete injury update on Clarence Goodson and Anibal Godoy. And the Quakes, I think with those two guys healthy, are a team that can make the playoffs. And without those two guys healthy, they're a team that draws it home to DC United. So I think that's a pretty big variance in terms of quality. And look, this is a Dom Kinnear team. Yeah. So I think even if Diaz is healthy, we know exactly what San Jose's game plan is going to be on the road in this one.
10 games unbeaten, but they drew Columbus in their last game. They drew Montreal. Oh, no, they beat Montreal.
You were there?
At home, I was there.
Somebody I know was there.
Right. I think this is a game that San Jose comes in and they get a point. I think that they're going to sit back, and FC Dallas wants to sit back and counter, and they won't allow them to. They'll out-counter them, and I think we looked at these numbers, 9 shots for San Jose all season. FC Dallas, 51 shots.
Did you say that? Did you say all season?
Yeah, I believe so.
Like day one till now?
I don't know if my numbers are correct. I don't trust them, but that is what my research found. They're efficient with the chances they take. FC Dallas is the opposite of that.
Man.
And I think Ameriqua and Wondolowski, they get you their chances. They're going to get a goal, maybe two. And FC Dallas, as good as they are, they have question marks. They have questions in goal. Is Walker Zimmerman a starter? If Mauro Diaz isn't there, who's starting? Is Kellen Acosta a starter? They're not bad questions because it means you have talent that you're making decisions between, but it's question marks.
Can I just interject right here?
Well, you did. I don't think you.
San Jose have 36 shots.
Oh, man.
and 16 on goal.
So, well, I mean, nine it was like if you divided 36 by 4, and then that was the count.
Which I was doing. Yeah,
Illuminati confirmed.
Mm-hmm. Well, my research shows that fill in the blank, can't trust
but
it.
But one
can't
more game it. Of the night.
one more, and it's a good one.
If you believe, then the
yes, 9:30 p.m. We've got a little Rocky Mountain Cup action. Colorado's headed to RSL. What do you know? MLS live game as well. These were the two worst teams in the West in 2015. They're both doing well this year, looking like they have something to them. Made some moves in the offseason. We're I think a week away from the Jermaine Jones experiment, so that ought to be fun. Injury concerns. Once again, RSL, Raimondo, Morales, Winger, Garcia. Not sure if all these guys are going to play. What's going to happen? Will we see Gashi? I hope we see Gashi.
I think we're going to see Gashi. The question is, with Kevin Doyle out, does Gashi end up playing as a number 9 or as a second striker or on the wing? I suspect it'll be on the wing again in a 4-2-3-1 with either Solignac or Baji as the center forward, which is great. That's what I want to see from Colorado. From RSL, my question is, are we going to see them use the ball a little bit? Because they've been a lot of fun so far this year, but it's all been about getting out into transition. They are so far removed from the, you know, the RSL teams of old that would keep the ball, pull you out of your shape, and then kind of kill you from possession. That just doesn't seem to be the club in the bag so far this year.
And it's, you know, Beckerman coming back will obviously help a more experienced player on the ball. If they can get healthy in a point where they can play out with Burrito and Plata on the break, or play a more controlled possession with Morales and Beckerman in the midfield and Sonny, like, that gives them two options. It gives them two ways to beat you, and that's how most of the best teams in this league are able to survive, because especially home and away, what they've done fits the away model so well, in that you go on the road, you don't have to control the game. You don't have to dominate the game, similar to what we're seeing with FC Dallas. But when teams come to your stadium and they're going to sit back and they don't want to take risks on the road, can you break them down?
No doubt.
Weeby, yeah. is Justin Glad a starter for you now?
I mean, look, I don't think you're ready to put the starter label on him and just say, look, it's your position, kid, go get it. I don't think that's the way it works, but right now, I think he might be a better option than Hamison Olave. I think Olave has been error-prone this year. He's shown that he's going to get reds throughout his career. He's going to put you in positions sometimes that you don't like, and so much of his dominance in the past, I felt like, hey, he was great with the ball at his feet, and he read the game well, but like that physical dominance was a big part of it, and the older he gets, the less he is able to use that in a way that's effective for them game to game. I think you stick with Glad. I think you do, because I don't know that Gashi's a guy that's going to run away from him. He's not going to be one that wants to mix it up if he plays in that number 9. But that's a big decision for Jeff Cassar to make. We'll see what he does with that one. A little bit of news on this. RSL, potential $50 million training center, academy, USL facility. That could be really cool. They're talking about if they build it, they'll move that residency in Arizona up to Salt Lake City. They'd have an indoor facility to train in during the chilly winters there at in Utah. Could be really cool. Go check it out. That's all we have for the weekend here. Let us know what you think. React on Monday. We'll, of course, look to see what you say as we discuss the games. Watch them all. MLS Live, Sunday, a big night, 3 straight. We'll see you on the other side. The mailbag coming up.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extratime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Mommy's in the kitchen, cooking up something good. Daddy's on the sofa, pride of the neighborhood.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. Mac DeMarco leading us in. Speaking of cooking up something good, I think we got a good mailbag here, Dave. I'm going to let you take it away. What's up?
We do have a good mailbag. You asked about experiences at the Chicago Fire game. We got a gazillion emails, which I will get to, but I want to start with Chef Tom here. He says, I'm a food safety geek. And your scenario of either picking up a thrown bratwurst off the ground or consuming a tossed orange soda as part of a goal celebration is worth a quick response.
Is it quick? Or
this is a long email, and I'm going to read it all, so sit down
fine,
and relax.
I'll chill.
Assuming the bratwurst hits the ground directly and isn't wrapped in a napkin, naturally occurring pathogens on the turf surface would transfer to the dog/bun. It would take a temperature of 165 degrees Fahrenheit to kill any dangerous germs. The dog is most likely held at 140 degrees Fahrenheit at the concession stand. Don't worry, it was likely heated up to at least 165 before being put on the hot dog roller. When you consider the temperature of the dog, the drop as the dog is carried from the concession stand to the seat and then launched through the air, it's not likely above 110 degrees when a player picks it up off the pitch as part of the goal celebration, or in this scenario, of course, Jimmy Nielsen having it thrown at him, which is not hot enough to kill any germs. On the flip side, the soda is filled with carbonic acid, which is a natural inhibitor to pathogens. However, the acid doesn't necessarily kill bacteria that are on the outside of the straw holding the drink, meaning the player could get sick from the drink being tossed. That being said, if it were a question of Russian roulette and the player had to pick one option, the safest would be eating the end of the bratwurst that has been untouched by another person's mouth. Although both would contain germs, only a small portion of the bacteria species on the planet are harmful to humans. In most cases, bacteria has no impact or may, in some situations, help a human's immune system. Both items have germs, but the germs on the beverage are most likely to make you sick. Therefore, the hot dog would have the least likelihood of harboring a harmful germ and thus the safer of two options. Next week, we'll discuss the impact that herbicides or pesticides on the pitch have on the rationale.
Chef Tom,
let's go, Tom.
Dropping knowledge. Put on your hard hats. Knowledge coming from the sky.
So, in a way, we were vindicated.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's just, for me, I can simplify that for you. A, anybody who throws a brat that they've already taken a bite of is just dumb. Just eat the rest of the brat. Why are you throwing a brat in the first place? I don't have any respect for you. B, don't throw anything on the field ever. That's really the overall point here that I should make. But if I'm going to pick up either and eat it, it's going to be the brat every day of the week. Like, I can get orange soda anytime.
I don't drink soda. So.
See, here's my thing. If you're eating a brat, any kind of sausage, you're already committed to putting something horrible for you into your system. So you've already made that commitment. Whereas orange drink, I mean, it's not great, but it's not as destructive.
Ooh,
as,
really?
I don't know. Are
you kidding
soil?
Me? Orange drink?
Straight like, orange drink is some pure sugar.
Yeah.
That's high fructose corn syrup as like, it was made.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I'm sticking with the brat here.
Let's jump over, since we talked temperatures, let's talk Chicago. Freezing cold, snow, but Chicago fans were not perturbed by this over the course of their game. Bill says, three times during the match when we got blanketed with snow, Section 8 led the fans in singing the song, "Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow."
Yeah, uh-huh.
That's a good one. Craig comes here. He says, since we mentioned the Freezer Bowl, he wanted to talk about it. He came from Baltimore all the way to Chicago for this game. He brought his friend and his friend's two kids to their second ever Chicago Fire
Those
game.
Those poor kids.
He has a list of issues, from spilling hot cocoa on their snow pants to snow pants being too small to the wind blowing their
There's nothing worse
hood down.
Than spilling the hot cocoa on the snow pants, because it quickly becomes not hot and just blankets you in like freezing cold.
But in the end, Kennedy Igbonanike turned all that was bad into good. He says, assist to Warren Craval, and we went home with memories that won't be erased very soon. A few other fans mentioned other sporting events they've been to, whether it's Blackhawks, outdoor games, other sporting events in the Chicago area that they've been to. Jimmy Garcia was at that Blackhawks game, has a whole list about how it wasn't that bad at the Fire game, but he ends it with a quote from Ron Swanson, so he gets it being read, which is, there's no such thing as bad weather, only inadequate clothing and methods of transportation. I appreciate that for Jimmy Garcia. And Nathan emails in to Andrew specifically, so none of us get mentioned. So, Doyle, cover your ears for this one, because we're not supposed to hear it. He said he went to the U.S. Women's National Team 2012 Women's World Cup qualifier in Chicago on a cold Saturday. It was November 27th, 2010. 2011 World Cup. Thank you. They beat Italy. He said it was freezing 20-mile-per-hour wind gusts. They had to slowly move around the stadium as the sun set to remain in the sun every 15 minutes. But he said, clearly home field advantage over Italy.
Yeah.
And then they went on and made it to that.
I mean, you know it's cold World when Cup you're following final. The sun in a stadium.
Yep.
I mean, that look, I mean, I'm thinking about not going to Red Bull Sporting KC this weekend.
Oh my God, I knew you were
because
it
might
that.
Be a little bit snowy or like windy or rainy. I'm just like, I could just sit at home and watch MLS live. So I don't know.
Listen, quality over quantity.
Yeah, I'm a little soft. You're right. But I've done this many times. I was there in the freezer MLS Cup. That was a pretty bad one. I will admit to going inside for the second half.
True. That's true. I stayed inside for the whole thing, actually. So
yeah, just throwing soft around like it's no big deal. Hey, that's it for us. I think we're going to give some swag away here. It certainly is going to go to Chef Tom. Chef Tom, that's some A-plus mailbag material. Great stuff.
We'll send some fire gear as well out,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, for sure. So
fans,
hit us with your address. We'll send it out to you courtesy of MLSstore.com, your source for MLS swag. Big thanks to Mike McGee. Big thanks to you guys. We're going to call this one good. Huh?
Can I throw in a little real quick thing? If anyone's in KC on April 13th, they're wearing the Wiz rainbow jerseys. Yeah. If anyone buys any of that and wants to send it to me, I can send them my address. Just let me know.
Okay. Yeah, good try.
I just want to throw that one in.
Yeah. We'll see you on Monday. Have a good weekend, everybody.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.